Good morning. My name is Leslie Keller, and I will be your conference operator for today. Participation in this conference call is strictly limited to invited participants. This call is exclusively for financial analysts and investors. If you are not an invited guest, please disconnect at this time. I would like to welcome you to the conference call on the 2025 Preliminary General Economic Policy Guidelines. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a questions and answers session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, please press star 8 on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, please press star 8 again. I will now introduce you to the speaker, Rodrigo Mariscal Paredes, Head of Economic Planning Unit at the Ministry of Finance, to proceed with their remarks. Please go ahead.
Thank you all and good morning. So I will be briefing some comments about the general economic guidelines. I first start with some comments about the global economy. Then I will shift to the Mexican economy and a little bit on the public finances, the closing of the year, and what we are putting as an update to the package for 2024 and 2025. And finally, I would make some broad remarks on the latest initiative that we passed into Congress for the stabilization fund, which I think is very important because it would be an advance in order to shield the public finances. So let me start with the global economy. So basically what we still see, it's trade disruption related to climate change and geopolitical tensions. They are setting the tone for the inflationary and economic outlook for the year. We see monetary policies across the world to begin to ease this year, but the monetary policy stance will remain tight. And the economic slowdown is expected for this year and next relative to what we saw in 2023. After El Niño started the meteorological phenomenon in May, global temperatures have been breaking record highs every month. So we think that there's still a high probability that El Niño will continue for this month and will extend into the next month. So meanwhile, the phenomenon, the La Niña, is likely to develop during the second half of 2024, characterized by unusual cold temperatures in the Ocean Pacific. Typically, this will bring higher precipitation in Asia and drier weather in America. So this is a factor that will be probably going to see in the economy for the rest of the year. Now, the Red Sea conflict and the Panama Canal water problem will still see some disruptions related to the cargo transportation. Basically, this has reduced the amount of transporting ships that go through the Panama Canal and the Suez Canal. And we estimate that this has been taking some part of the economy, especially because not all the trade is going through in the same fashion, although they have find different routes to work on, but basically we have been lost in some part of the trade with the economy. So these disruptions would last for the year, and so far we estimate that this have been reduced the GDP, the global GDP, by 0.4 to 0.6%, and if these disruptions continue for the rest of the year, it could get up to 1.2% of the economy. The Mexico effect on this has been pretty mild. We don't think that this is going to be a material effect, but there are second-round effects that could affect the Mexican economy and the global economy, which would pile on the disruptions that we already saw. Now, the financial markets have been developing during the fiscal part of the year, were shaped by market participants that finally bought into the Fed dot plot. So basically, as of December of 2023, markets expect 175 basis points of cuts during 2024 versus the projection that the Fed have of 75 basis points. But since February, market expectations have been converging towards the Fed projections on 75 basis point cuts. In emerging markets, several economies took the lead and start cutting rates, just as they did when they started with hike rates during the tightening cycle. For example, Brazil start hiking in 12 months, like 1 year ahead of the Fed, and start cutting 7 months ago. Chile start hiking 8 months ahead of the Fed and cutting 8 months ago. Meanwhile, Mexico start hiking 8 months ahead of the Fed. It's just recently that they've been cutting. So basically what we think is that the rates will remain high for a while and could reduce the room for maneuvering in some risky scenario. So one thing that we think it's a potential risky scenario is in the risk tail scenario when we see a recession, not in 2024, but in 2025. That means that for those central banks and countries that have the rate too high, it's going to be very difficult, or they will require a lot of meetings in order to reach some neutral level. Especially for Mexico, for example, if they were to cut 75 basis points per meeting, Mexico will require 5 meetings in order to achieve a neutral stance, while the U.S. would only need three meetings of cutting 75 points. So this could create some potential volatility. But again, this is on a tail risk scenario. It's not in our baseline case. Now, the U.S. elections are coming, also the Mexicans. But in terms of the U.S. elections, we see some key events that we need to monitor and what could be the impact basically in the financial markets. We don't expect to have an impact in the real economy, but we have the Republican Convention in July, the Democratic Convention in August, and Election Day in the 5th of November. Basically, so far, the tides are that Trump is slightly favored to have an advantage in the polling, particularly in the swing states like Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, Nevada, Wisconsin, and these states were all for Biden in 2020. So mentioning Donald Trump as some campaign proposal that he have could affect Mexico's economy, we basically find two ways, two policies. One related to trade. He has been proposing a 10% tax on all goods coming outside the U.S., so this could potentially have some inflationary pressures for the U.S. and some disruption for Mexico's trade. And he's also proposing a 1% tariff on Chinese cars that are made in Mexico. Now, in 2023, Mexico produced more than 2,000 vehicles that represent close to 0.6% of the national vehicle production. So this is it could be a mild production, but it would create some volatility in the markets. And finally, we think that also migration could have some potential effects or potential trade policies that we could see against Mexico. It's the stop the migration in the southern border. We don't know how this would be handled, but it's another matter of volatility and uncertainty that Trump presidency could have into the economy. Now, let me switch to the Mexican economy for 2025 and 2024. So basically what we see is that Mexico went through a period of above average growth, close all the pre-pandemic trend that we saw last year, from 2020. So we expect that the economy will keep performing above historical average, both in 2025 and 2024. However, there is a natural slowdown compared to 2023 due to growth normalization in some sectors, supply shocks that we already talked about it. And of course, the monetary policy stance remains a position that will slow the growth of the economy. As the pre-pandemic gaps close, the monetary policy remains tight. It's natural that the growth will begin to slow this year and next year. So when we estimate the gaps, we still see that the GDP gap versus to the pre-pandemic trend has a negative gap of close to 6%. But there's a difference between the gaps inside the sector, so that the composition of the GDP, well, we saw a very good performance in the investment last year. So practically, with the investment gap relative to the pre-pandemic trend is practically closed, but the consumption gap is actually higher than the GDP growth, the GDP total numbers. So we will see some catch up there, and there's some room to accommodate that. Now, we don't expect a significant boost in consumption during the first quarter. I'll explain a little bit why. But despite the 87% increase in total pension transfer for senior citizens, the amount represents only 1.7 percentage points of the first quarter consumption. So we can talk a little bit more about the deployment of the social expenditure. But so far, we have not seen like a big push into the economy, and we have some advanced data up to February and March. But so far, for example, the sales growth from the retails is growing at 2% as a year to date relative to in February relative to December of last year, while in other election period normally they grow a little bit less, but for example in 2006 in the election they grew at 2.5%. So we don't see as of February a huge push in terms of the sales growth when the pension and, or many of the social programs have already been deployed since, in particularly in January and starting in February. And this is also the case for the inflation. When we look at the inflation rate relative to other election periods, it's currently accumulated at 1.1, and this is practically the average of other periods. And so those the core inflation and the minimum basket inflation and the minimum and the basic basket. So we don't see really a pressure built into the inflation, and we have data to the 2 weeks of March, and neither the economic activity index. So I'm not saying that they are not performing good. They are growing, but this is not something that would highlight or would be characterized as something unusual or an outlier. We also believe that there's going to be some sectors that will be likely to moderate and some others that will be perform better. So some of the sectors that will be or that we expect to grow and to have a more dynamic growth is the transportation. Basically, we've seen an increase in the demand for transportation in Mexico. Also, the electronics related to cooperation and enhance some of the semiconductor production in North America. And also transport equipment, particularly the electric vehicle production. So that is sectors that are going to be growing this year, and so far they are performing quite good. However, there are some other sectors that are not performing quite good. For example, the leisure and recreational services, temporary accommodation services, food and beverage. So although these sectors have been growing exceptionally, basically because of the pre-pandemic, the closure and the recovery. But now we expect to normalize or even to grow below the historical average. In terms of the industrial reconfiguration towards domestic demand, we see sectors with greater integration with external markets accounted for most of the recovery from the pandemic. However, for mid-2022 onwards, sectors linked to external demand slow down, and sectors more closely linked to domestic market have contributed most to growth. So in 2023, the contribution of the sectors linked to the domestic market account for close to 70% of the GDP. Now, we expect that the domestic market would be important, but we already have seen a deceleration in the market and also in the foreign demand. So factors that could limit growth, one is the Mexican economy has been affected by recent climate event. Its effect on primary activities have contributed to the slowdown we observed in late 2023 and early 2024. In the future, it's effects that may not be limited to primary activities. They would not probably be high or have a big share in terms of the GDP, but we think it could affect some sectors. So, in average, the droughts that we have seen in the north part of Mexico, the level of dams are quite low. So potentially, this might, of course, affect the the agriculture, but also we've seen or we've been talking with industries or with sector leaders that they think that the retail and the wholesale trade, groceries, food, beverage could be affected, both in terms of the economic activity, but also in terms of the pricing, the temporary accommodation service, all the food industry, basically, but also the transportation equipment industry, because this is one of the industries that uses a lot of water services. Now, the second effect that could affect the economy are bottlenecks and supply disruption that have some becoming increasingly common issue. So we have like a tracking. We normally have the statistics and we're tracking number of events that negatively affect the economy through the production or the logistics, and we try to measure how much in terms of standard deviations they deviate from what we have seen in the past. So we have seen that these are kind of events that could impact this year. Again, this might not be some big disruption, but it's going to be a disruption still. Now, let me switch to the update on the public finances for 2024 and 2025. So basically, the public finances that we present with the pre-criterios or the preliminary general guidance are expected to remain sound with minor revisions for 2024 budget. And the main changes relative to higher than expected oil prices and better 2023 year and public finance performance and results, and some adjustment that we have to incorporate in the financial cost of the PSVRs that were revised upward. And for 2025, let me just remark that this is a transition year, so the Ministry of Finance is not intended to present this 2025 as a binding thing. It's just a trend scenario or a scenario that could be taken into account when for the next administration. So we estimate an inertial scenario with a reduced in the non-recurring spending that we have identified. So the total budget revenues for 2024 will stand at 22% of GDP. Basically, all revenues will have more oil revenues because of the revision of the oil prices. We went from 56.7 to 71.3, and this is basically related to what we have seen in the global economy, the dispute with Russia, the cuts in production by the OPEP, and some of the disruption that I already talked about in the transportation of that going through the Red Sea. Now, also the old platform were revised downward from 1.9 to 1.8 million barrels per day. This is basically due to the data that we have been observed so far, and it has to do with the production of Pemex, because most of the privates have been kind of in line with what we expect in the package. The tax revenues, we also have a revision in terms of the of having more revenues, and this is related basically to the closure of the 2023 budget. When we did the projection for the 2024 budget, we were using a lower tax base, which end up being in the final data better than what we expect at the time. So that would create some space of higher revenues, but also like a buffer if the economy was not supposed or was not going to be performing as we were expecting in the package. In terms of the spending, we also revised downward the financial cost. Recently, cost savings, basically the liability management and all the hedging programs that the public credit debt management were doing. And the program of spending for that reason, for higher revenues and lower expenditures in fiscal they could have some room to accommodate that and to spend a little bit more. And basically, the budgetary balance remains practically in line with what we set in the budget, just increased from 4.9% of GDP to 5% of GDP, while the PSBR was revised upward, and this was a higher revision. Basically, it went from 5.4 to 5.9, and basically the revision is due to an increase in the non-budgetary PSBRs, which are related to two factors. One is the what we call indexed bond effect. Some of the registers of the indexed bond financial costs are registered in the PSBRs, not in a line in the budget. And the second one is the below par effect, that is bond that we are issuing at one face value, but the net effect in terms of the cash flow is below because of the par effect. So that means that we have practically a revision. Now, this is a revision that has already been shown in the data. So the projection has to do a lot with what we saw in 2023. So if you remember, in 2023, the revision effect of the PSBRs went from 3.9 to 4.3. So basically, the non-budgetary PSBRs increased from 0.6 to 0.9. This is a revision for the same reason, while the budgetary, it barely moved. So most of the revision that we have in 2023 was a revision of the data that we observed. So it's something that we already seen in the data. However, let me just remark that this is just a projection. It's based on the trends. It could change as we go through the year, but so far is the revision that we practically see in the data, and it's already incorporated in our projections. For the total debt, what we call the historical balance of the PSBRs, we revised as well from 48.8 to 50.2. So the revision of 1.4 percentage points is basically, or a part is because of the revision of the nominal GDP, close to 0.6 percentage points. This is because basically the deflator, because the GDP growth were practically in line with what we were expecting at the time. Basically, the deflator, we were revised from 5% to 4.5, so that's 0.5 percentage points, explain the higher debt to GDP, while the other part comes from parts of the budget, as I was telling you, of the revision of the PSBRs. Now, for the estimate for 2025, although the fiscal consolidation is proposed, is not binding. That means that we are not imposing onto the next administration. They could take a look at the figures and then decide for themselves what is that the program, what that they want to do. Now, the magnitude, let me make some comment, because I already seen some remarks in the media and other outlets that we are imposing a spending cut of 3 percentage points of GDP, which is totally not true. The reduction would be 2.2 percentage points of GDP, and this is because how the correct way to estimate the reduction is relative to what was approved, because the revision on the income affects the expenditure, as I already mentioned. So in reality, the program is the base for the expenditure, and for that part, the cutting that we are proposing is just 2 percentage points of GDP. The reduction includes lower non-recurrent expenditures related to infrastructure projects that the president has. It's an election. This is some one-offs. Lower financial costs that we... It's in line with what we expect for the rates and the financial... the rates in Mexico and the U.S. So, of course, that's an assumption, and that could be different, better or worse, but this is an assumption. So we think that the lower financial costs will also open some space for the next administration. And in addition, it's worth mentioning that the oil price formula for 2022 has its result of a formula. So in principle, one could expect that the next administration could have some room to adjust for more revenues, basically, of the oil price effect. Now, the transfer to municipalities, we practically are estimating that they will be quite high and growing. And all what we set in the budget complies with the fiscal rules and with the assumption that the balances and the public debt will be kept in check. Basically, the debt will not change relative to the GDP. We will have a primary balances of 0.9 and a deficit of 3%. So that is in agreement or it's in line with the fiscal targets. Now, let me finish with some remarks of the Stabilization Fund. So basically, we finally got the approval of Congress of the changes in the law for the Stabilization Fund. So this is a very important step towards replenishing more fast the Stabilization Fund that basically would create some space to absorb shocks for revenues. Originally, the fund have three ways or three sources of revenues. Basically, the surplus from revenues, oil gains in FX and oil hedges, and some of the Banxico operating surplus. But basically, 70% of the revenues that would go to the fund were coming from non-recurrent sources, which is a kind of weak position for a stabilization fund, because that means that you would not contribute or you would not replenish it with the proper timing and the proper amount. And we are proposing basically the law already has two new sources of funding. One will come from savings from financial costs of the federal government. Basically, the average of So 5 years of average from now of that savings is close to 30 billion pesos. So in principle, every year we could get 30 billion pesos from this source if it decided to do so. And we also have in the law an additional contribution of financial assets from the federal government. This does not include social security funds or any other fund besides the federal government. And we also estimate that it could be another 30 to 40 billion of extra revenues. So basically, with these changes in the law, we estimate that we can reach a level of the stabilization fund very good in terms to absorb the shocks that the economy have in 2 to 3 years, instead of 10 years if we have not changed anything into the law.